Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
We are doing this every Tuesday. They need to come hang out with Mooch and the missus.
That is called fascism. Okay, he is a fascist leader.
He's his own worst enemy. He's creating his own problems. You know, he's like one of those people who can't get out of their own way.
I don't want to be one of those Trump haters.
Okay,
I just want to make...
Everyone is a product of their upbringing and their personal loyalties. I'm a human being, and I probably got overtaken by the excitement of him winning.
The minute you called me to say, boom, as soon as I got that, boom, I called you right back.
Anyway, you lose the argument. All the ladies out there.
My mother's like, why are you cursing so much? I'm like, Ma... Where do you think I learned it from?
We do this podcast. I go into the city. We have dinners together or we'll travel. We spend time to be together as a couple and a family and as business partners. And I feel like it really helps us.
You still love me?
I do.
Okay,
do you still
God.
Love me?
Very much.
Okay. I don't know if you have, I mean, let's
very much my
there.
Liberal, hot wife. Very liberal. The girl's very liberal. Okay. So, you know, the last guest we had was a, you know, transgender woman. She's one of the first to come out. And so, you know, I was trying to pay attention. I got a little bit of attention deficit disorder. I was trying to pay attention. But now we got like a superstar sports guy. Not saying that she wasn't great. I thought she was great, but they were talking about lip gloss and stuff, you know?
Yeah. No, we were not.
I do not know much about lip gloss.
I wasn't talking about lip gloss. He's just
We got Trevor Moad in the house, and so...
No, pronounce his name.
That's right. Fine, Moad.
Moad.
Anthony's
Moad.
Not good with names.
I'm not good with names. I grew up in a family of blue-collar people. No one read in the house, so I got to pick it all up later.
But, yeah.
But you're running a sports...
The CEO of Limitless Minds, a joint venture with Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
And then the president of my own consulting group, but basically work in the sport, military, and business world in and around, you know, helping the, you know, that area of mindset, mental conditioning.
I mean, I need you to come to my house.
There's 25 names for it.
I need mental conditioning.
Yeah,
to live with this guy.
That's good.
Hello.
I'm listening. I'm just transferring
I'm
money.
You to see if you know.
My wife's spending. I'm transferring money. Okay. So
far, he said like three or four very annoying, like feminist.
Well, good. While she's moving her microphone around, I can start asking questions. Is that all right?
Not feminine. Like you've said misogynistic things.
I have not said one misogynistic thing.
I was talking about lip gloss. I'm spending your money. Like, what the hell?
Oh, wasn't talking about one misogynistic. Here we go.
See why I need you in my house?
You know,
I need mental conditioning.
The company, right? We got like 80 people. $10 billion under management, I have to be the personnel director because this way, if there's any complaints, come to me.
Man,
I'll tell you
this is the name of his book.
There's two, fuck off and shut up.
Take
and how about get back to
what it
okay,
takes, how to think neutrally and gain control of your life.
All right, but
we need this book.
How'd you get into this, though?
We're ready?
Your dad, right?
Yeah, we're on.
No,
we're
all right.
You're rolling.
Fantastic. You know, it was interesting. In the 60s and 70s, there was sort of a big push and a big movement in and around the belief that you could psychologically develop people and help them get better. Like you could actually change or improve the way people think. You weren't endowed based upon the way you were raised or you were born. It was led by Norman Vincent Peale on the Christian side, and then you had Maxwell Maltz, Zig Ziglar, Brian Tracy. My father in the mid-70s as a former high school basketball coach and teacher would eventually join six other top coaches in Seattle, Washington, and they would actually leave coaching and education and go into consulting on the business side. These classes they were teaching in high school called personal enrichment principles like pep talks or increasing human effectiveness as part of the psychology or social sciences curriculums, they began to take to the Pacific Northwest. And you had big companies like Boeing and IBM and you still have Starbucks and Nintendo and all those companies that were really dealing with this unique business problem, which in the early 80s and the late 70s, the average workday was 8.5 hours, and the average employee productivity was 4 hours. And if an employee was dealing with an emotional challenge, financial distress, divorce, any of those issues, it would drop down to 1.5 hours of productivity per day.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're looking at 17% efficiency, and the business world really got ahead of this and said, we need to figure out a way to help our employees think and or feel better about the challenges they're facing. So when they step in our building at Boeing or wherever, they're more equipped to deal with life.
Right.
So I was, you know, born in the mid-70s and my dad had left coaching and I was raised in this really unique environment where he was a full-time peak performance educator, motivational architect, and had these systems. And, you know, by 4 years old, I was, you know, had affirmative reminders and affirmations, which were basically
That's really forward thinking.
Ad campaigns. And I would listen to Zig Ziglar and Brian Tracy every night. They played Waves that had subliminal thinking. I don't know if any of it worked, but...
do you think it worked?
So
tell me the truth.
Let's talk about those guys.
I want to know. Do you think it had a positive impact on you?
You know, it's interesting. As we talked sort of in the beginning, I've never really believed in the growth of this industry. And the reason I say that is because I think it had a significant impact. But I went to a good prep school and was a good high school athlete and went to Occidental College in Los Angeles, where President Obama went to school, and Jack Kemp. That's an interesting one. But I went there, and I think I had a good mentality and a good mindset.
Right, your
because
disposition.
Of how I was raised.
Right. Yeah,
but I still think I looked at it optionally. You know, kind of like nutrition. Can I eat? Can I not? I don't think I recognized the power of my thinking, the power of my language, the power of my words. And until I was 18, and I just finished my first college basketball season. I was rushing the SAE fraternity, and you know, I had a rash breakout. I figured the fraternity brothers had found some way to engineer a rash for me or something. And,
put something in your laundry.
Yeah, but. 12 hours later, I'm at Huntington Memorial.
Was that stress, the rash breakout?
Well, it was a number of things, but 12 hours later, I'm in Huntington Memorial Hospital in Pasadena, California. This is 1994. I'm 17, 18 years old. After 8 hours of testing, I go to like a side room, and they sit me down and say, based upon what's going on with my immune system and my white blood cell counts, which I don't know anything about, they thought at that point I had cancer.
Oh, God.
So at 18 years old, and there's no education or about it in the 90s, you know, I mean, now you have the pink ribbons and Strong Against Cancer and all these things. So the only thing I knew at that time when I heard that was anybody I knew who had it had died. Mm-hmm. And so the doctor was great. And he said, you know, listen, this isn't the type of news you give your parents, you know, at 17 years old on the phone. Where are you from? I said, Seattle. And they said, well, you need to fly home and sit your parents down and tell them. So... At that point, I flew out of Burbank and I get to Seattle. Well, this is pre-cell phone, so I didn't tell my parents what the issue was. I just said I need to come home. I get home about 11 o'clock at night, and my parents overslept, and I kept trying to call them, but I had a calling card, so it wouldn't work unless they answered.
Oh, my God.
And so I was stuck at baggage claim number 19 for 6 hours, you know, at 18 years old. And I always tell people at that point, all of those affirmative reminders, all the things that I learned, everything for the first time in my life became very real.
Yeah.
Because you're no sicker the day after a diagnosis like that than you are the day before, but you feel different.
Right.
Yeah. Right? And your thinking does not become optional. And this is the issue. This is probably the biggest issue that faces this field. There's no efficacy that can prove that positive thinking works. And to me, this push and this force of telling people to be positive is why the field's never grown. But while there's no efficacy around positive thinking, the efficacy around negative thinking and negative language is very clear. From the Mayo Clinic to the Cleveland Clinic to every place, all the data that negative thinking and negative language works negatively.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost a multiple of 4 to 7 times more powerful than positivity.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, it was a risk calculation. All right, well, I'm not going to go that way. So I applied that to the rest of my life. And for the 24, 25 years, I've lived with that sense of urgency that I probably wish I would have known at 4. And I think it's allowed me to teach this. It's allowed me to sort of survive at Florida State and Alabama and Fort Bragg and all these different places, because to me, it's not debatable that the mind can be a force multiplier for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
It really was just a matter of, so I really leaned back. Deirdre, I think I went back to that training when I was called to do it. I think sort of like this You know, Karate Kid, you have wax on, wax off. And you say, why am I doing this?
Right.
I think at 18, it was like, this is why.
Right.
Because I was uniquely equipped to handle it and
live a little bit differently. So did it turn out that you were actually sick? Were you sick?
So I dropped out of college, and I had three different opinions. The first two were the same. They thought I had a form of cancer. The third diagnosed me with shingles, which is rare to get at 18, and ulcerative colitis and a number of other physiological breakdowns.
So, so they wanted to autoimmune
yeah. deficiencies, and, okay. and so they brought me back 3 months later, and I was healthy. Which was, and I had to take a year off of sports, so I did theater and music and other things at Occidental. But yeah, it was a really, I was better, and so for me, what I always say is that 6 hours is what changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah,
know,
it was
just
like a
just the
point,
fact
right?
that it became yeah. real, but it also gives me unique empathy on why the field hasn't really grown, why people don't buy in, because. I had a dad.
What was the ultimate diagnosis, though, that you just had shingles and
yeah, I had some autoimmune challenges, shingles, and ulcerative colitis.
So you were able to get through that, and you changed your diet, I guess, on the colitis.
Changed my diet, went on medication. You know, got better, and so
you probably weren't sleeping. You know, rushing a fraternity, they like torture you.
Yeah, you know, I was like anybody.
I got mono. Everyone gets sick.
You know, and then I was like way over index. Occidental had all those Phillips Academy and Berkshire, and I'm like straight blue collar hustle grit. You know, I was, you know, just outflanked by everybody outside of, you know, my effort. So I ultimately hung in there and went to undergrad and graduate school there. And but yeah, so it's a unique level of engineering. I'm grateful for the way I'm engineered, but it's been an interesting world to teach in this field of mental conditioning.
So you mentioned a couple of authors, and so, you know, I grew up in a blue collar family. My dad was a laborer, hourly worker. And so I have read those two authors. I've read Og Mandino, and if you remember him.
Yeah, Og Mandino. I used to listen to his audio.
Norman Vincent Peale, the whole notion in the 50s, power positive thinking.
Yep.
Napoleon Hill.
Yes.
Think and Grow Rich. Dale Carnegie.
Yep.
And obviously the grandfather, founding father of self-improvement books, Benjamin Franklin, the autobiography. My favorite Benjamin Franklin book is not the autobiography of Ben Franklin. What's my favorite Benjamin Franklin book?
Fart Proudly.
Fart Proudly. And I'm going to send you a copy of the book, okay? Because
your husband farted in his mouth?
It's not his most popular book because people don't know it, but I'm going to get it for you on Amazon. I'm going to send it to you.
Hopefully they don't tell me that tonight at open school.
So there's a very famous scene where John Adams and Ben Franklin are stuck in Paris together, and the Continental government doesn't have any real money. And so they're shacked up together in a room, and it's freezing out. And Franklin was loaded up with gas. He was like a human propane tank, and he's blowing the room up. Okay, and so John Adams is opening the window, and they're freezing. They both had a cold the next morning.
Oh, geez.
So as a result of this inspiration, he wrote a book called Fart Proudly. It was an instant bestseller. But the reason I'm bringing this up to you is that, like, that is the bedrock of American self-improvement for a blue-collar kid.
Mm-hmm.
That is a body of literature that helps propel kids like you and me into the American dream if they really believe they can do it.
Yes.
Right? Because you know and I know the word confidence is from Latin, confidos.
Mm-hmm.
It means with trust. So if you have self-confidence, you trust in yourself. You can shoot the target. Give me a gun, I'm going to shoot the target, okay?
And ultimately, it's, you know, I'm a big believer in behavior is being more powerful than emotions.
No question. Attitude.
At a really young age, you know, I'm at home and I'm watching the Super Friends. Remember in the 80s, really good cartoon. And my dad comes up and if I mow the lawn on Saturdays, I get $15. But a lot of times I didn't want to mow the lawn. So I think I'm 11 and he says, he walks by and says, hey, mow the lawn today if you feel like it. And then walks out the door. I'm right into the Super Friends and I don't feel like it. And 3 minutes later, he comes back in and says, and make sure you feel like it. And then walks out. And at 11, that taught me a lesson that you can make yourself feel like doing anything by doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And halfway through mowing the lawn, I was grateful that I was doing it and I was going to get the $15.
Great
and I
story.
Could go to AMC and I could go to, you know, all those elements. And I think that with the sports world, it's interesting. I was at a major pharmaceutical company today, in and around the Limitless Minds that Russell Wilson and I are involved in. And you know, it's always an interesting, you know, sort of an environment when you step into this coming from the sports world. You know, like, well, you're a sports guy. Well, sports is the ultimate EBITDA-based business. You know, in my origins of watching the beginning of the Alabama Empire and the Florida State Empire and what Kirby Smart's doing at the University of Georgia, the best are promoted, and if you don't win, almost 30% of our coaches are fired every year. Mm-hmm. Right? So you know, your past performance is your own standard, which you have to constantly live up to. And so I remind people that, you know, these maybe they're $150 or $200 million empires, but the NFL is $14 billion, and $11 billion comes from ad revenue and sales, and they're big businesses. Mm-hmm. So when you work in that world, and I've been fired three times, you know, in and around just being with teams and the coaches get cleaned out. And, you know, my last time was working for Michigan when we, you know, Ohio State, and it basically happened right after we lost to Ohio State. So that measure of winning and success is so important. But this is one of the interesting points that I hope to make.
I've been fired a few times too, Trevor. Some of them famously. You
know, mine. Well, I live behind the scenes, but I believe in the idea of the aggregate of marginal gains. You know, like a great organization is built on taking, if Anthony works with me or for me and he's really talented, how do I make him better? Because you're only going to win in the sports world when your best players perform at the highest level.
Mm-hmm. So do you consult the corporations?
Yes.
Limitless Minds is, right?
We're really trying to move more into that. And that happened kind of fascinating because so Russell Wilson's an interesting, he's from Richmond, Virginia. Mm-hmm. You know, he played at NC State.
We met him, babe, at the celebrity fight night.
Yeah, he's really nice and guy. I like his wife. She's
super very nice.
Yep, and mm-hmm. you know, so he's 5'10". He doesn't fit many of the physiological metrics that are true metrics of sports, and you have metrics and analytics are important.
I hate the Patriots, that one damn pass. I mean, that was a bummer. You know, we were on. Like,
well, you know, and in the book we talk about that moment because actually in the final 2 minutes of that game, 124 million people were watching that final 2 minutes. Oh, it eclipsed MASH as the highest televised moment in the history of the United States.
Oh, the last episode of MASH,
that,
right?
The last episode of MASH was before that. I think it was 111 million.
Right.
But this particular moment, and you know, a lot of people wonder, you know, how does somebody get through something like that? And I always knew that he's uniquely built. We believe that while there's negative thinking works negatively and positive thinking is a tough sell, we really focus in the deep sports world on this idea of neutral thinking. And being a neutral thinker, which I think this country could really benefit from, is when something doesn't go your way, it's real. Mm-hmm. That did not go my way, okay? Or it did go my way. I played really well or I didn't. But what happens next is not a feeling, it's what I do. And it's two separate pieces. The problem with positive thinking is for many people, it requires a quick, such a dramatic shift, like that didn't happen, just be positive.
Right.
But you know
like
it did.
Like in denial almost. Right.
Right?
Yeah.
You know it did. Mm-hmm. So when you know that it happened, you've got to accept, because I did A, B, and C, this happened. However, no matter the most
bad things happen to you that are not even your fault,
and even the most cynical assholes are going to understand neutral thinking, because I don't care who you are, no matter what just happened, nobody can tell me what's going to happen tomorrow. Nobody can tell me what's going to happen at your parent teacher conference tonight. Whatever happens is going to be more based upon what you do.
Right.
And so this idea of neutral is distinguishing that the past is not predictive. Mm-hmm. Your new behavior can change it. Mm-hmm. And so Russell is one that lived in that moment and stood up and said, they said, hey, Pete Carroll said that throw is his fault. He said, the ball was in my hand. It was my fault.
I remember.
And he stood up there. But when 10 days after he sends me a text message, I need to hit the reset button. This needs to be my best offseason ever. Mm-hmm. Well, that was what was in our control. We went down to Rancho Santa Fe in San Diego and put together an incredible offseason, and he followed that moment with the best season of his career. Mm-hmm. 34 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, and we had a really clear plan as to how to do that. And his ability to stay neutral, which was to own it, is what allowed him a year earlier
I think it's brilliant.
To have the Super Bowl. He won it, and then the next year to deal with losing it.
Mm-hmm.
And as Jeter would always say, you've got to be willing to step up and strike out if you're going to ever have an opportunity to step up.
You were there, baby, when Russell won it.
And hit
no,
it
I know. I remember.
We it was here in New York.
Yeah, we met MetLife Stadium.
Yeah.
We watched it.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
Obviously, of course I remember
So,
how did you hook up with Russell? How did you guys meet?
So after I graduated from college, I was, put my hand at pro soccer, and it was $800 a month.
Is that why you were in the LA Galaxy shirt?
Yeah, I've got my LA Galaxy shirt on. But I was a high school teacher in LA Unified School District, and then trying to play. My girlfriend at the time went to SC. We were up in the mountains in Pasadena and got chased by a bunch of some gang ritual, and we were like, it's time to get out of LA.
Oh my God.
And my roommate had been traded to this team called the Miami Fusion in Miami. So we got teaching jobs in Delray Beach, Florida. And as I was teaching and coaching, I was 22 years old. I went to a coaching clinic at Nick Bollettieri's Tennis Academy, mm-hmm. the famous tennis coach mm-hmm. in Bradenton, Florida. And I heard the director of sports psychology speak, and I didn't really know what it was, but I was sort of raised in this environment that lent itself well to that. And I said, this is what I got to do. I like teaching social sciences, but I'd rather teach athletes,
right.
in and around peak performance.
Right.
I wrote like 10 letters, harassed the guy. My dad flew out. We went up and got and then I got a job. I took a pay cut from teaching to go work there. And then I spent 12 years there, and I knew when I got there, and I'm sure Anthony can relate, it was the type of environment where I knew if I could make it here, I was going to make it.
Right.
And if I wasn't, then I wasn't good enough, and I'd go back to doing teaching. Something different.
Right.
And by 24, I'm dealing with Drew Brees and Chris Winkie and Steve Hutchinson and Michael Johnson and Patrick Rafter and Tommy Haas. And I didn't deserve to be around any of those people, but I had hustle and found a way to add value in and around the athletic world.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm not going to ask any specific names, no players, anything. I'm just going to give you a case study, okay? A guy's playing second base. He has hit the first baseman his entire life.
Oh, you're talking... Oh.
I'm not giving any names, okay? Yeah. Then all of a sudden, he's catching ground ball at second base. He's throwing it into the stands.
Mm-hmm.
There's another guy. He's dead on... control pitcher, but can throw 100 miles an hour, okay, and all of a sudden his mechanics are perfect and the ball's moving at 100 miles an hour, but he can't hit the plate.
Yeah.
Or there's a situation in basketball where the kid is a perfect shooter, but then all of a sudden something happens, and you're not old enough maybe to remember, so maybe you are. There were 3 seconds left. It was the early 80s. Maybe you remember. Jordan wanted the ball. He told Scottie Pippen, pass me the goddamn ball. There's 3 seconds left. He's at the top of the key.
That was in the 80s or the 90s.
Was it the 90s? Yeah. I don't remember what it was, but I'll
Jordan
never forget it. I'm bad with the time
they
and place, but I remember the moment.
Yeah.
He took that ball, whoosh, and he stuck it right in the hoop.
Right.
Okay. And we know that these people are very talented, and they didn't lose it. To your point about disease, the kid didn't lose his talent from one inning to the next or one batter to the next. What happens?
So it's interesting. I would begin my career working for Tom Coughlin at the Jacksonville Jaguars. That sort of gave me that opportunity.
Yeah, love him, by the way.
And one of the things that ended up
your
becoming his developmental model for drafting athletes was this idea that there are 4 levels of competency. And I think this goes, Anthony, to what you're talking about. A lot of people start out at this first level, which is unconsciously incompetent.
All right, this is the first podcast I'm taking notes. Okay, just go ahead.
They start out unconsciously incompetent, which means the athlete, the person, doesn't know that they don't know. It's very difficult to help somebody that doesn't know that they don't know.
Right.
Okay, that sounds like me in the White House. Okay, that could have been my entire 11 days. I should have titled the book Unconsciously Incompetent. Okay,
let's
go to the next one.
And so... this next phase, which sounds equally funny, but was really important, is consciously incompetent. And a great parent, a great educator, a great coach, a great teacher allows that person to recognize, I have a problem. I've got a challenge. I'm not good dribbling the ball to my left. I'm not good holding onto the ball. I'm not good in this particular protection. Or this is something I need to get better. I mean, ultimately, what a doctor does is make us consciously incompetent. They give us a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean we've done anything with it, but we know. at least by knowing, we can change it. Now, a lot of great athletes that we'll deal with at the places I'm at are unconsciously competent, and I think this gets to your point. Unconsciously competent is when people have a lot of success,
okay,
but they're not really sure why.
Okay, yeah.
You know, they might say, hey, Deirdre, you were unbelievable this quarter, just in terms of your pipeline, the business, everybody you're talking to, your close rate. What do you attribute that to? I have no idea, man. Neaptide, you know, and the problem with that is obvious, right? You can't repeat it.
Right.
So what happens to some of these athletes, and I've dealt with them, I've dealt with lefties that are, you know, 6'8", and when you're lefty and 6'8", you should be able to pitch for the rest of your life if you throw in the mid-90s, and then it just all of a sudden, it goes. And so you really have to get back to when you were successful, why were you successful? And I helped re-engineer a pitcher who's a great pitcher now, has had a great career, and it literally was when we were coming back, we just started throwing out in a football field, so he didn't feel like he was on a baseball field, and throwing in a basketball gym, and then gradually kind of moving, but then he was able to identify, when I pitch, this is what I do. And I think what's happened to some of these guys, whether it's a Knobloch or whether it's some of these different types of people, that understanding, that connection of this is what I need to do to make this happen and be consciously competent, which means I know and I know that I know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what you're looking for in an athlete. And like a Russell Wilson, consciously competent doesn't mean you're great, doesn't mean you're perfect, but it means you have a process and you know how to follow it.
Right.
This is when I wake up. Okay, I do yoga. I listen to this type of music. Like, for example, negativity doesn't exist in Russell Wilson's world. Right?
In any aspect of his life.
In any aspect that he can control.
Right.
So when I was raised, what I didn't understand until later, but we weren't allowed to watch the news in my household. We could watch the sports and we could watch the weather, but I wasn't allowed to say the word can't or listen to country music.
Can I tell you something? So yesterday, we have a 5-year-old. He just started kindergarten.
What's his name?
Nicholas. And he asked me this question. He looked me dead in the eye. He got off the bus. This was the first thing he said to me. He asked, Mom, is I can't do it a bad word?
Interesting.
And I said, well, did your teacher tell you that or something? And he said, they did. They said, I can't do it is a bad word. But I never knew that was a bad word. And so I explained to him that it's obviously not a curse word, but they're saying that it's something that you shouldn't think, because then you're going to tell yourself you can't do something that you should probably try.
I'm glad they said that to him.
Right, yeah. But he was so confused about it. But anyway, they're getting into this kind of
it's a self-imposed limitations. I mean, right. Limits are real, but the self-imposed ones are the most challenging ones. And what I think is unique about Russell is he knows he's not 6'4". He knows that there's physiological requirements that he might not meet.
Right, so that's one of the things I have to work on. I have to realize that I'm not 6'4". Okay,
you
got to work on that, okay?
You have to be consciously confident.
But I think the point is, what's the real goal for any of us? To use the gifts that we have. And so many people that I've crossed paths with in my life don't make it, not because of who they are, but because of who they think they're not. And if you are what you do, then when you don't, you aren't.
I get that. That resonates.
And it's and no, but I think this is probably, in my opinion, because negativity is the most powerful force on the planet. And some of the military units I'm at really teach the special operations community how to understand what they're consuming. So if it's MSNBC, CNN, Fox, or whatever, this is what you're watching, because all the data is 3 minutes, for example, 3 minutes of news in the morning increases your probability by 27% that you're going to say you had a shitty day.
Really?
So, but a lot of it comes down to education. Hmm. Like, everyone says, well, what makes a great athlete? I'll tell you this, a great athlete more times is what they don't do, or what they don't watch, or what they don't say, or what they don't listen to, than what they do.
I get it.
I believe that.
I get it.
And the discipline, that's where I think, like when I was down in North Carolina and talking to a command sergeant major, and he's explaining this to me, is we don't mind what our guys watch. A lot of times if they want something agnostic, it's got to be the BBC. But if they're going to watch something, they have to watch it responsibly, like they're watching House of Cards.
Mm-hmm.
Because the goal of a news organization is entertainment. And they're responsible to their advertising buyers and the people investing them more so than the people. I'm not saying what's right or wrong, but I'm saying if our country learned how to consume information, right? If you're going through a personal challenge in your life and you're listening to Jake Owen and Sam Hunt, I love those dudes. They're down a lot of our football games, but you're going to want to go play in traffic. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's times in your life where you can't bring that into you, and that's where someone like Russell is going to listen to Hillsong United. He's going to listen to House Fires or more spiritual music because of the chord progressions, because of all of the, you know, and he's understanding, I'm going to keep that out. I've got enough things I'm facing when I'm going up against Jadeveon Clowney.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here, but we have built our mental conditioning program around the minimization of negativity. Negativity's most powerful carrier is our own language. When I say something out loud, it's 10 times more powerful than when I think it. I don't even try to change people's internal thoughts. Everybody's all over the place. I've been with them before Grand Slam finals. I've been with them before Super Bowls. I've been with them before national championships. It's okay that your inner thoughts are all over the place because they're unformed. But when you say it out loud, it's 10 times more powerful, and it could be a multiple 4 to 7 times more powerful, according to Harvard, if it's negative. So if I say today's going to be another one of those days, I may have increased the probability by 40 to 70 times. So
I need to have brought my mother onto this podcast. Well,
but if I just not said it, but what happens is people say, Deirdre.
She's not the only family member, by the way.
Yeah, okay, I know. Right.
But if people say, Deirdre, Anthony, be positive. Well, people are like, fuck you, mm-hmm, to be positive. But if we learn how to not be negative, that's the game changer. Excuse my language, but that's the game changer.
Do you work with like 20-year-old kids that are trying to get into the music industry?
What's that?
It's
interesting now that I'm living in Southern California.
My son is 20 years old. He's trying to break into the music industry. Yeah. Actually, I think he's talented. Look, he's my kid, so of course I think he's talented, but he's got to work on the positive.
But that's everybody. Well,
he's probably
got to
work more on the neutral.
Well, more on the neutral, but he does say some negative. He does verbalize some negative stuff. I'm like, dude, don't do that. Don't say that. You know,
but this is the thing. Like, it's crazy, but I've watched it in so many situations. Just by removing the negative, if you never did or even told to ever be positive, but removing the externalization of negative, your life would change dramatically.
Okay, so I'm on the pitcher's mound.
Yes.
I'm throwing 100 miles an hour.
Yep, I can see it.
But I'm missing the strike zone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but it's a big, important game. You're coming to the mound to talk to me. What are you going to say to me? Right?
Well,
you took a little break.
Yeah.
I got the rosin bag in my hand. You're walking up to me. Now, what do you say to me?
Well, there's basic fundamentals of thinking, and the one thing we know is at any given moment you can only sustain one thought at a time. Right? Now you can get it from the outside where I say, Anthony, don't think of a pink elephant or something, your mind immediately goes there.
Right.
But what
did you ever read any Dennis Waitley's books? Psychology of Winning?
Yeah. But what you tell yourself, but I learned a lot of this. The great thing is like from Michael Johnson when he decided to wear the gold shoes in 96.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay? His mindset around the things that he focused on, I'll never forget, we had 16 guys getting ready for the draft, and Drew Brees asked Michael Johnson, you know, a question about goal setting. And right in the mainstream psychology world, everybody's got to be from Harvard, everybody's got to be from UPenn, everybody. Like, athletes don't look at things that way. Like, oh, you went to Penn? Great.
Martin
like,
Seligman, right?
You know, I mean, I get that the regular, like, mm-hmm, does it make sense? Are you helping me do simple better?
Right.
Okay? So Michael said, to your point, the most powerful thing that I've ever heard. And he said, you know, how do you set goals? I mean, were you taught it? And Michael said, have you ever been to Safeway? So what do you mean, the grocery store? I said, yeah. Yeah, I've been to Safeway. And he said, have you ever walked into Safeway and not wrote down the things you needed? And he said, yeah. And he said, have you ever walked down into Safeway and wrote down the things you need? He said, yeah. Michael says, if I write down 6 things, I'm in and out of Safeway in 8 minutes. Aisle 8, aisle 11, aisle 15, aisle 17, I'm out. If I don't write it down, it takes me 3 times the amount of time. I'm in aisle 8 and saying, why am I in aisle 8? I have all this anxiety.
Can you come to Target with us on Sunday and just bring
but
you
I mean it's
family?
But that's the point. Like, when a great athlete can explain it in grocery shopping list.
Right.
Right? There's, and because we're teleological. So that pitcher needs to know location, low and away, the specific elements, hand placement, a hitter, drive the ball down the middle, Serena, accelerate the racket head. Right? It's in the simplicity. And as I remind myself that a word is three dimensional, and that three dimensional pitcher affects my emotional state. Right, so when I'm driving the words in my mind,
it's one thought. It's
simplifying the thought. That's right. And as a coach, you can influence them as a parent. But this is the other point, Anthony. You're only 1/10 as powerful as that pitcher. The power is with him or her. They have the power. So they've got to know what to think about.
So when I'm sitting on the couch at night praying for my closer to hit the strike zone, it's not helping? I'm just asking for a friend.
I believe in collective consciousness, right? Princeton studies it, that the collective consciousness of a country can raise people up or can bring people down, like the whole thing around the Cubs. Right. But one more point on the language thing. Everybody knows Bill Buckner. He recently passed away, and he was a great first baseman for the Boston Red Sox. Now, he famously, in 1986, led to a great moment for you, Anthony, where...
I remember like it was yesterday.
Where, in the ninth inning, Mookie Wilson hits the ground ball, and it goes through his legs. Well, everybody knows what happened, and ultimately the Mets would go on to win the World Series. But in 2011... somebody found an old interview that had resurfaced in 1995 from Boston where Buckner was interviewed 12 days before the World Series. And he said, the dream I have is to win, but my real nightmare is to let the game-winning run score on a ground ball through my legs. And the first time I saw
I just got goosebumps.
And the first time I saw that, it really reinforced to me what we already know. The power of what we say out loud plants in the subconscious.
Right.
And that's why what we watch and listen to and consume. So just by not saying that, who knows if it would have happened? Maybe it would, wouldn't. But by saying it, he's increasing the probability.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think you have 80 employees, you manage $10 billion. The language of how your organization speaks to each other, how they look at success and or adversity, is really the lifeblood of your organization.
Well, or any organization.
Or any organization.
A political organization, an athletic organization, a money management organization, or a tiny podcast. Yeah, I agree with all that. So I had to teach all this stuff to myself. I mean, I had great mentors and great everything, but like when I was growing up,
you figured it out.
I had to figure it out. And like the thing I learned, and I'd love to share your reading list, and I'll obviously share mine with you. But the thing I learned is the language matters.
Yes. Okay?
So as an example, she's heard me say this 100 times. You don't work for me at SkyBridge. I'm the founder and managing partner. You work with me.
Yes.
A very, very big difference between for and with. Now we're collaborating and I'm providing you autonomy and partnership.
Yes.
Very, very important. It's not my firm. It's our firm. And we are doing this.
Right.
And my old boss, who's now deceased, he was an amazing guy. My first book, I started it out with his most repetitive quote. You know what he said, Trev? He says, some people grow and other people swell. You better figure out early who you are.
Yeah.
You know, because as you're growing, you don't want to be swelling.
Right.
Right? And it's a beautiful line, you know? And so like, you have to always put yourself in that humble position. The other thing is, her dad worked in the parking attendant business. My father was a laborer. My grandmother was a maid. So you come into my space, you come into my life, we are equal.
Yeah.
Okay? Because you could be my grandmother. Okay? When I'm in she sees me taking, you see these are Italian singles. You see those, they have Ben Franklin on them. See them? Those are Italian singles. Okay? She sees me in the hotel rooms dropping these everywhere because that could be my grandmother.
Yeah.
That's making that bed. You see that?
Yep.
And so if you think and you act like that, you're here to serve.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's a very big difference. And that's why the people at SkyBridge, they stay. And that's why it's 15 years old and a very rough and tumble, very cyclical business. We figure it out.
Right.
You know? So you're doing, I can tell from your spirit, you're doing exactly what you were.
Yeah, you love it, obviously. You have a lot of passion.
God bless you for that. Very passionate. But before we let you go, can we talk 2 minutes about the book?
Yeah, that's what I want to talk about. And then also about having, I mean, how do people find you if they want you to speak at their, a corporate event or something like that?
it's interesting, and this is why I'm with Jay Connolly and the group. In the world I've been sort of worked in, I've never had social media, and it never really mattered in sports. People kind of know who it, you know, is. Mm-hmm. And the opportunity to do a book came from HarperCollins. They'd just finished Phil Knight's book, Shoe Dog. And they'd Russell Wilson and I had done a TV show when John Gruden left to coach the Raiders for, sort of followed him up, and we did 5 episodes on ESPN. It was the first time sort of a mental conditioning or advisor of my role had been there. And Russell really fought ESPN. He said, hey, as important as all the physical elements for these quarterbacks entering the draft, their psychological architecture is going to be every bit as important. So that kind of opened some doors. I didn't really have a back end, but you know, now since I sort of made the decision, Maria Shriver had called me, Maria Shriver out of Los Angeles. And I remember when I got the message, I was like, Maria Shriver? And I was sort of kind of knew who she was. And so I called an IMG agent. I worked for IMG, Max Eisenbud. And I said, what does Maria want? He said, and he represents Maria Sharapova. Mm-hmm. And I'd known Sharapova forever. And then he's like, I'll let me check. And then he said, hey, you know, she says, hey, hello, but she never called you. So I look at my assistant and I was like, Maria Shriver, like Mary Darnold Schwarzenegger called me? And so she was coming out to Scottsdale and she wanted to meet with me. And I was, you know, okay. And then I couldn't do it. So we ended up meeting in Los Angeles.
Did she end up calling you? She didn't call
you?
Yeah,
she did.
No,
call.
She had called me and she wanted to meet. And, right. And so we went down. I'll never forget. I go to Brentwood. I go to her offices and, you know, just a kind of a cool place, all white. I obviously, like anybody, you know, has an understanding of who the Kennedys are. Mm-hmm. And so she walks in the room, probably the second most intimidating initial meeting I had, probably since Nick Saban. And she said, you know, you had a really difficult time finding you. And she says, you know, you don't have social media, you don't have any of these different types of things. And I said, well, and she says, I run this program called Architects of Change. And what I've seen that you're doing in the sports world, you're serving 150 athletes and they're the best in the world at what they do. But you have a voice that's built for 150 million people. And I was like stunned, and I didn't agree with it. And I never even thought that way. And then we spent 3 hours together, and I did, you know, a Facebook Live and a few things with her, just in and around thinking and neutral, and just a different way of thinking about it. Mm-hmm. and speaking about it. And that really, a month later, I was kind of like, man, Kennedy just asked me to serve. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had never even thought about like going out and being like a thought, you know, I didn't even know what it was.
A thought leader,
yeah. and then when you're in sports, and Anthony could understand this, as big as it is, and you're on the sideline, these national championships and all these things, you're still marginalized because the athletes are consumer-facing.
Right.
The coaches are consumer-facing. You work at the service of them. You're on the edge of greatness. Mm-hmm. So obviously you have this level, if you can make it there, if you can make it at these programs where there are no self-help people. So I take pride in that, but you never think of yourself as exceptional. At least mm-hmm. I never did. Mm-hmm. So it was a really weird duality, but started my mind down that road. And then ultimately HarperCollins would come to us and make the offer for the book. Alan Zucker, a New York agent, would get the deal done. And so now I have social media at Trevor Mowad, TrevorMowad. And I've had Instagram now for 6 weeks. And then, you know,
oh, you're a newbie.
What's your Instagram handle? Same?
At Trevor Mowad. And then Twitter's at Trevor, T-R-E-V-O-R, Mowad, M-O-A-W-A-D. And I've hired a great PR firm.
They're the best.
And Maria Menounos, who I met at the Super Bowl, had connected me to them. And she had had her own adversity that she had been going through. And so we got to spend some time. I did her podcast with her and her husband, Kevin. And that was super cool. This has been super cool. So now the goal is really, you know, can we help more people?
Yeah.
And I think
you definitely can.
And that's our goal.
I got some great ideas for you.
Yeah,
so we'll talk.
We do.
We'll talk
so that's
offline.
Why I wanted to know how to find you.
So I got to talk about some specific athletes with specific names. No. Offline.
Offline. No way.
My wife paid me the biggest compliment on Sunday after the Jet loss. She goes, you really care about this team. I mean, I can feel the pain.
5 hours later, he was still talking about the loss.
I can't believe they were up 16-0. They
you know what?
17-16.
I had both those quarterbacks last year for ESPN's Draft Academy, Josh Allen and Sam Darnold. Yeah. I'm a big Sam Darnold believer.
He's a tough kid.
I'm a big believer.
I love the kid. I love where the team's going. I didn't like where they were on Sunday, I got to be honest.
Now, fair enough.
But that's where
thank you for being here with us.
Right,
and we're definitely going to get your book, so we'll promote it on our social media also.
Awesome.
So
thank you, guys.
Thank you.
See you then.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.